Behave yourself now. How many times do we have to talk about this?
We've got state senate written all over.
Only for a good cause.
Oh, I like it.
All right. Good morning. It is October 28th, 2009, 10 a.m. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting in our hearing room on the 12th floor of the Capitol for our regularly scheduled biweekly meeting. This is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kulk. Any opening comments or from my fellow commissioners or explanations for anybody that might be watching the video stream as to why our ties are so goofy? No, none. Okay. I hate to be the one person that actually watches and wonders. At any rate, we had a great little ceremony this morning for the United Way, and thanks to Char Magstead, our social director and United Way campaign director, for the low price of a dollar, staff were able to take a very sharp tool and get very close to our necks and cut an inch off of our ties, and I think we raised millions of dollars. But at any rate, it was a...
I would like to add that one particular employee paid $20 to cut Commissioner Kramer's tie real close, so I don't know what that says, but I thank the employee for doing that.
Thanks for missing the critical veins. But if had I known in advance, I would... Anyway, okay. With that, if there are no opening comments, we'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda.
Move the items on consent.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
On to the regular agenda, KC1. I move the commission conditionally approve revision number 22 to surface coal mining permit KRSB 8603, held by Dakota Westmoreland Corporation, to add 890.4 acres to this permit for the Beulah Mine and to update the appropriate sections of the permit to reflect mining in the added area.
Second.
This is... Well, it's a pretty significant revision, I guess, in that 890 acres is nothing to sneeze at. It's this acreage adjoins the south side of the existing permit area and creates an entire permit area of 2,666.1 acres. And Dakota Westmoreland wants to start removing topsoil and subsoil soon so they can get that done before winter and begin the overburden and coal removal later in the winter. So... on a bit of a fast track, we did not get any complaints or concerns raised after the notice. Everything seems to be intact.
All in favor?
Aye.
Commissioner Clark, ends the end of my portfolio.
Thank you. TC1. I move the commission issue an order in case number GE09682, canceling warehouse license number 740, issued to Gackle Grain Co-op at Gackle, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Gackle, North Dakota is discontinued effective immediately.
Second.
This is the result of a request received from Gackle Grain Co-op. They no longer wish to operate this as a public grain warehouse and have sold the business.
All in favor?
Aye. TC2, I move the commission adopt the order reissuing Certificate of Corridor Compatibility numbers 70, 76, and 78, and route permit numbers 79, 86, and 88 to Minnesota Power, an operating division of Elite, for its proposed ownership of Square Butte Electric Cooperative Center to Duluth 250 kV DC electric transmission line, case number PU09631.
Second.
Items TC2 and TC3 are interrelated. We've talked about for some time this DC line that Minnesota Power is going to be taking sole ownership of or proposes to and convert it to basically a wind power line via DC to drop wind power into northeast Minnesota. And then the existing Milton R. Young station will be operated solely by Minn Kota. Minn Kota is going to be building a new line to hook up Milton R. Young. Currently, power from Milton R. Young Station goes over this DC line, and so there are a number of steps that have to take place. Now, the reason for the sort of odd motion is that the DC line itself was pre-siting law, and so the entire line wasn't cited by the commission, and so we don't need to transfer any certificates of corridor compatibility, generally speaking, for the line. But since the line was built, there have been a number of reroutes to the line, generally related to lakes and sloughs that have gotten larger, and so over the years, from time to time, the Score Butte has had to come in and get those short reroutes sited through the commission, triggering the Siting Act. And so this is just merely transferring those corridor compatibilities from Square Butte, which is a affiliate of Minn Kota, to Minnesota Power.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. TC3, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 6 months, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 due upon filing an application in case number PU09670, Minn Kota Power Co-op Inc.'s proposed 345 kV electric transmission line from Center to Grand Forks, North Dakota. This is a big line. It's actually one of the biggest, probably the biggest, that the commission will be siting here, at least in the near-term future, and probably has for many years. Typically, the size of transmission lines that the commission considers fairly large is 230, and most of our transmission work lately has been in that 230 kV range. This is a 345 line, which is a large, high-powered electric transmission line. There are, 500s and 765s, but in this part of the country, this is about as nearly as big as they come. This would be the line that would hook up the Milton R. Young Station. Minn Kota would have sole ownership of it and transport the power into the heart of their service territory. So it would basically run from Center to Grand Forks. The proposed project right-of-way is in the neighborhood of 260 miles long, so it's a fairly long line. It is all contained within North Dakota. It's not an interstate line. It's all an intrastate project. They're likely to utilize, and I thought this was interesting, they're likely to utilize, they indicate in their letter of intent, single-pole steel structures, which we're seeing more and more of these single-pole structures as opposed to the multi-pole frames that we've seen in some of the older lines. But they apparently are looking at those with a span of approximately 1,000 feet between poles in most locations. As far as a timetable for what they are looking at with this particular line, right now, Minn Kota is active throughout the state, and I know we've received information, and I know landowners have as well, and people in local communities explaining the project and sort of scoping out where it might go. They anticipate by the third quarter of 2010, they would file a combined application for certificate of corridor compatibility and a route permit with the commission. The second quarter of 2011, they are hoping to have all siting approvals granted, as well as local permitting authorities granting their permits that they need to give. And then perhaps beginning construction on the line in the second quarter of 2011, with construction complete around the first quarter of 2013. So we're looking at a number of years out, which is expected with a line this long and this large, but they're starting the process now. As far as the total investment, Minn Kota is estimating that the capital cost for the project will be somewhere in the neighborhood of between $309 million and $349 million. So it's a significant investment for a transmission line in North Dakota, and we look forward to receiving more information from Minn Kota and hopefully feedback from affected landowners as well.
All in favor?
Aye. Okay. That ends the items in my portfolio.
Very good. Commissioner Culk.
I previously had one item in my portfolio, but that's been withdrawn until we have another work session on.
So that means you have nothing on there?
I have nothing further to add.
Very good. Any other announcements? Oh, I know this is mine.
It's just the wrong cover sheet.
Yeah. Any questions?
Commissioner Culp, did you put the mic on the
Sure. This is going to be a long time, Dave. We had a work session on Monday where we looked at the settlement agreement. It was the first time the three of us had sat down and gone through the work session the settlement agreement between those that intervene and actually the company. And during the work session, there was a couple things that we weren't all comfortable with, the largest being the economic development fees that go into Otter Tail's rate calculations. And so we asked for some more information. We're looking for that information to come back to us, and I suspect we'll schedule another work session. And we just need to make sure we do the right thing in this one.
I think what's really at stake as much as anything, Dave, is a philosophical concern about whether it is even appropriate to take ratepayer dollars and utilize them for an economic development fund, much like Otter Tail's been doing for the last several years, as per a previous settlement agreement back in the 80s. When you look at, you know, the rising cost of everything, and especially the rising cost of energy, you know, our question is, the standard we have to apply is, what's best for the ratepayer? While investing $450,000 a year into various economic development projects throughout the various communities might be good for the community, it might have some social value, might have some economic development value, it might leverage lots of other, you know, investment, but does it keep rates low? Does it shore up the system? Does it ensure reliability of electricity? Those are the standards. And those questions have not been adequately answered, at least yet. And so what I suspect the company is doing now is readdressing all of that, and we expect that they'd come back with some sort of a counter proposal, or maybe they want to make their case, or maybe we'll go to a full hearing and rehear the whole thing. Who knows? But at any rate, there's just some uneasiness about the appropriateness of ratepayer dollars going for this type of an expenditure.
Yeah, Dave, I've had a long-term discomfort with this particular economic development fund. It was created in the late 80s as a result of, it was a settlement. Otter Tail had over-earned basically and needed to return some money to ratepayers, and so there was a deal struck between the commission at that time and Otter Tail where they would give it back, quote-unquote, and return it in the form of an economic development fund. I've had a long-term concern that that's not a core part of the business of what a utility company should be doing. The commission, and with other companies, does have tariffs that have sort of an economic development tariff or a rider where, if it can be proven to the commission's satisfaction that a break on a company's electricity rates will in fact result in lower overall costs to other ratepayers, then we can look at that on a case-by-case basis. And to me, that's the one area where there's legitimately the commission can argue that, okay, you're giving one customer a break, but it benefits all because it spreads, it perhaps keeps a large business in town that spreads costs over more customers. But with this, we've never had that kind of accountability with this particular fund. Otter Tail comes in every year or two and gives in a report on the amount of money that's been dispersed out of it and different projects that have been helped, but there's never a tie back to exactly how this helped keep rates low for all the other customers that are funding this particular project. And I think probably economic development in general in North Dakota, economic development funding in general in North Dakota, has received scrutiny over the last few months and years, and really I think the era of not having accountability for these economic development dollars is over, and we just need to ensure that we're doing our part to make sure that ratepayers aren't having their rates unnecessarily raised to fund projects that maybe aren't paying them back at all.
And I think it's, you know, important too to put it in the context that we're talking about $450,000 in a rate increase of what's now in the current settlement that this $450,000 is part of, a rate increase of just over $3 million. So it's a pretty significant, well, it's about $3.5 million actually, but that's a significant chunk of that $3.5 million. I also think that the historical context Tony talks about is important to consider. In 1988, when this original settlement provided, I think at the time it was about $315,000 per year, which they've been, $318,000, that was $318,000 out of a $1,318,000 refund because they were over-earning. And so while in the late 80s, economic development, publicly funded economic development was kind of in its heyday and seemed, you know, to be appropriate and important, rates were coming down. So there was, you know, everyone was feeling a little bit better about it. But I think Tony's point about the scrutiny and accountability of today is a different environment. And so that's the environment we have to consider this request in.
Was that spoken as the former economic development director of North Dakota?
I always, and never mind.
So when do you expect to have a work session on this?
Well, we've asked the company to give us some information back, and I believe that that's in the process of coming back to us pretty darn quick. So as soon as we get the information back, I would suspect that within the next, less than next month or so, we'd be have this back in front of us, finding a date that works for all three of us. But just for me, this, you know, it was my first rate case sitting in on, And that's where some of the questions that I had, that, you know, why are we doing this? Is this the right protocol? Is this the right setup? And like Kevin brought out, the amount of money for this was overall, it just kind of jumped out that we need to take a good second look at this.
Well, I think, Dave, too, to remember, in terms of the process, depending on how the what the company does come back to the advocates and the people they are negotiating with, I mean, that could trigger any number of things. It may not just be a work session. They may want to make their case, which sure. requires a hearing. And anytime we veer very far or even a little bit from what's kind of in front of us, what's already been considered, what the public has already had an opportunity to have input on, you know, that clock has to start over and we have to go through the appropriate due process.
Well, that's a good point. And I forgot to mention, too, that since we had our work session, I've already had three emails from constituents with their viewpoints on this whole deal. And there might be some more information that comes to us from different venues.
Okay. In terms of the corridor compatibility, will there be any will they be using any of the existing corridor, you know, or they're going to have to file for a new corridor for the power line?
This will be a new line. It's a
new line. So
yeah, it's a greenfield line. So I mean, it'll be a brand new permit. I mean, they may be able to use a little part of, you know, some corridors they're nearing substations. But
when you talked about this earlier, you talked about a lot of national attention being put on this, especially, you know, among electric providers. Still getting a lot of contacts from other regions of the country, looking at, you know, using a DC line for wind.
Yeah, I do get questions about it every so often as I talk with other regulators and folks in the industry throughout the country. And DC, generally speaking, is not widely used. It is used in some applications, but predominantly it's an AC system that we have. The unique thing about this particular line and why I think folks are looking at it is you're taking a remote resource like wind generation, and DC doesn't interconnect with the rest of the system. It's like a superhighway that transports the power from one area and just dumps it into another area. So I think people are looking at this as one of the first, if not the first, large-scale renewable project where you're trying to take renewable energy, in this case wind power, transport it from a remote site and dump it into where it's needed, and it could have a kind of a precedent-setting value for how people view hooking these remote resources up.
It is a very creative solution to a very urgent challenge here in North Dakota, as you know, and you know, the partners that put it together. We're quite creative, obviously, and it's a wonderful solution that provides Minnesota the opportunity to meet their renewable mandates in Minnesota, and for Minn Kota Power to ensure that the Milton R. Young Station remains viable and an important part of their offering and resource planning. So, it frees up an awful lot of that constraint that goes from North Dakota into Minnesota. The interesting thing about all of this, of course, was the announcement last week by the TVA as well, which I'm still kind of curious as to how they plan on getting 450 megawatts from the Dakotas to TVA of wind, but 200 megawatts of that wind announcement is to come from the Ashley project, the CPV Ashley project that we received a letter of intent on in June of this year. So how you get 450 megawatts without new transmission is a little bit beyond me, but I went back and looked at the letter of intent from CPV, and they cite three transmission lines near their project, and one of them being a 345 kV line that goes from Leland Olds to Groton, which is a, of course, a Basin Electric line. How that gets power to the TVA, I suspect there's all kinds of swaps and things that are contemplated, but you see the demand, first of all, continues to grow, to the point where TVA announces a 20-year, 450,000-megawatt purchase power agreement from the Great Plains of the Dakotas. Clearly, the demand is out there, and we just need to get it to them.
So I will ask each of the commissioners in turn, how much did you pay for the tie that was cut?
Boy, that's cruel.
I know.
Mine was donated to me by a friend. My wife took out this certain tie and said, I'd take this one. I never want to see it again. So that's how I got the tie.
Are you talking about $1984? Present value. Mine was actually donated too. I had forgotten, and I walked in with my favorite Ronald Reagan tie. Oh my! I wasn't going to get that thing cut, so Charlene had this thing laying around.
Charlene knows you too well. Actually, Dave, I paid a lot more for it today than I did originally because to ensure that I won the biggest pie, I plopped down $30. So, let's just say I paid for the pie, shall we? Yeah.
So how much money did you raise?
$100? I suppose, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. It was enough to get the executive director here. Jenna blessed us with her presence, so it was good to see her in her new capacity. She was a great hire for the United Way, and I, for one, is pleased that she's remaining in our community. If there's nothing else, we'll recess while we sign some orders, and we'll come back at 10:30 to continue with the admin portion of the
meeting. Well, it wasn't the only commissioner. You didn't get Daryl to...
You know, we kind of blew that.
Yeah.
We could have.